Well, thank you. Well, hello, everybody. My name is Larry. I'm a recovering adult child. So good to see you. And that dance party thing, I think you're onto something. I spoke last Sunday at an AA meeting, and I had been asked that Monday, and I spent the better part of the week trying to figure out what to share. And for ACA, I don't have those kinds of, I guess, anxiety pieces. I just show up and try to share what's uppermost in my process. So, just as a qualification piece, my dad dies of cirrhosis of the liver when I was 21 years old in 1984. For those of you who aren't good at math, that makes me 61. I came to my first ACA meeting off of a bad breakup, and it was bad for me. It wasn't bad for her. She had, she was happy to be free of me, and I was devastated. But anyway, came to ACA in the summer of '87 and hung out for a little while, and wasn't ready. My sponsor at the time, I stayed around long enough to get a sponsor. And this guy that I asked to be my sponsor was a really nice guy. And he was very soft and very gentle with me. And he had asked me after a meeting if I was high during the meeting, and I denied it. I more than denied it. I sort of called him like, "You're crazy? I'm in recovery. How dare you?" And I literally ran to my car. I mean, I was not ready to put down my toys of drugging and drinking, and it took me like 5 years to hit a bottom with my drinking and drugging. And then I came in earnest into this process and started making meetings for the beverage and the dry goods. And then I knew this work was in the offing. I could be wrong, but it just seemed to me that I would go to meetings and I would hear about this thing called second tier recovery or family of origin work, and I knew what they were trying to refer to. And so I was glad to finally get clean and sober and then start trying to do this work. And I was at a place in my recovery in those fellowships where I felt that I wasn't making any progress. And I went away for an inpatient treatment program, which I won't endorse here by giving their name, but I went in for about 5.5 days, it was at the time. And they gave me an aftercare plan. And several years later, when I found that I was plateauing on my recovery, I went back to that aftercare plan and looked up what they had suggested that, I do, aside from being in therapy, which I've been in off and on since I've been about 80 years old. They had recommended a book, and I went to the local bookstore and found a book on a similar topic. And for some reason, it sort of dawned on me that I wonder if that ACA program is still around. Because we used to deal with all this stuff. Mind you, when I came out of that inpatient program, I had started an ACA meeting, and it was in a great space. It was in a hospital and air conditioning. I'm calling in from the Bronx, New York, so I'm Northeast, so it's great when you can get a meeting in a hospital because they both heat it and cool it. But nobody came. And we kept that door, the doors open for several years, and finally we folded it because it was like three of us. So back to this go round. I had reached a plateau in my process, and I went back and looked on the website and found that ACA was about to publish the Big Red Book. And I said, "Great, let me get on the line." They were taking pre-orders, so I got on the list, and I read the book and loved the book. And then somebody hit me up to the fact that there were board meetings online. I said, "Well, I'm going to see what that's about." And I forget how it happened, but I don't want to say recruited. I volunteered to be a part of the board, and did that for 6 years. A lot of different things, a lot of different hats I wore, including we had a website that came from the days of dial-up. And what was that thing that they used to sell out of Radio Shack? Some of you don't even remember there was a place called Radio Shack. But anyway, CompuServe. Our website looked like something that came out of CompuServe days and Radio Shack. And so we updated that. And then there was a lot of literature that was in the pipeline and worked through a lot of that. So that was about maybe 8, 9 years ago now. So that's generally my background, but I want to talk specifically to the newcomer for a few minutes. My experience was that I didn't know how twisted I had got. I came up in a family where there were three older siblings. Excuse me. My father was a weekend warrior, meaning he drank from Friday till Sunday morning. And then the rest of Sunday, he would sober up to go to work. But during those 2.5 days, it was hell to pay. He left the family, left me by the time I'm like 4, 5. And he returned 14 years later, and my mother and he tried to reconcile, and it didn't work out. And at that time, I was in college by that time, and I thought I had escaped the disease of alcoholism. I did have a brother who, at the time when my father died in 1984, my brother went in the opposite direction and got clean. And so I had these two roads before me. I had the road of my father, which was down a dark alley into a dead end. Or I had this other road that my brother had sort of found in terms of recovery. And so I didn't know that there was another road. And were it not for my brother getting clean, I probably wouldn't have even thought about this. I thought it was, I don't want to say a rite of passage, but I thought it was natural to have really complicated relationships and very difficult jobs and demands and, creditors. I thought this was par for the course. I thought that, so I had a high baseline and dysfunction tolerance. And coming to meetings and listening to people and being empathetic or compassionate with them sort of started to open me up emotionally so that I could see better and feel more. Because I basically came in here as a glob of confusion. And I didn't know how confused I was because everybody around me was as confused as I was. So there's a saying, I don't know how to translate it, but in the land of the blind, the one person that can see out of one eye is king. But I was in the blind world, an emotionally blind world, and so I had a very hard time being able to see it. I came to meetings, like I said, in 87, and we would sit in this room at our local university, and we would vent. And there was a guy who was probably, at that time, I thought he was old, but he's probably younger than I am now. By the way, I am older than my father was when he died of cirrhosis of the liver. And I have more sobriety time than my brother had when he passed about 4 years ago. Oh, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Wow. Anyway, where was I? So I came in in a very confused, very, it wasn't even denial. Like denial is when you, I think when denial is when you're refusing, the reality that's smacking you in the head. But for me, the smacking on the head was normal. So I couldn't be in denial about what I thought was normal. And slowly as I came through, I started to get better, more sensitivity, more definition, more clarity. So for the newcomer, I'm going to say it's about I've come up with this thing and I hope it goes over well. I don't know. It may be kind of flighty or wonky, but I sort of came up with a thing that says there are five elements to ACA recovery, and they all fit in your hand. So the first thing is make meetings. You got to make meetings. You can't go to the liquor store or go to a hardware store to find recovery. The people who are seeking recovery are in meetings. And not everybody's recovering at the same rate. Not everybody's recovering at the same level, but at least it's a group of people who have that as an intention. So the first thing is make meetings. And while you're making meetings, maybe you find a fellow traveler. A fellow traveler is somebody with whom you can go through a piece of literature of your choosing. It could be the Big Red Book, it could be the Step Book, it could be the Reparenting Book, or it can be outside literature that you find particularly helpful. There's a group that meets on Thursdays that's using other literature that I think is very good. So whatever literature you find, if you can find somebody to work with, that's great. And the third thing is to do the work. And the work can be, if you're new or if you've been here for a while, the work is, there's actually a trifold that we published while I was on the board there called To the Beginner in All of Us. And it was really born out of a sense that people would come and not know what to do. I mean, they come to meetings and sort of vent, but okay, now how do you get better? And so that trifold answers that question. But if you're doing the work, which could be step work, traits work, or repairing traits work or step work or whatever other work that you feel you have to do, then you're A-okay. You're in the game, baby. You're all right. The fourth thing that I think is a basic element of our recovery is reparenting. And when you're pointing the finger out at somebody, there's three fingers pointing back at you. So yeah, there's a trigger out there, but it's something that's not clear. It's something that hasn't surfaced, something that hasn't gelled, something that's emerging that needs some work through. Luckily, between the steps and reparenting and meetings and a fellow traveler, you have some really good resources to get that through. And the last thing, so we went meetings, fellow traveler, do the work. Be parenting. I'm not pointing at anyone in particular. I'm pointing at the camera. So this it looks like I'm pointing at you. Not true. And the thumb, which I guess is the most important digit, is trauma-informed therapy. And as it happens, I went to my first therapy session when I was about 7 or 8 years old in the shadows of Yankee Stadium. And it wasn't until about maybe 10 years ago, which is like 50, 43 years later, that I learned that there is a difference between psychotherapy and psychoanalysis. And I had been in psychotherapy for about 20 or 30 years, and in total, not all at one time, not the same person. But analysis, as I understand the definition, is when you deal with all the subconscious stuff, which is where my stuff lies. I mean, my thinking brain has barely got three brain cells making sense of the world. So yeah, I sort of need some auxiliary help. And So with those five elements, you have everything that you need. So if you're new, and all of this sounds confusing, if you just look at your hand and you're coming in and, balled up, you can make meetings, find a fellow traveler, do the work, or try reparenting, and trauma-informed therapy will get you out over the, it'll at least get you on the right road. So as I say, I've come in and I've done a lot of different things to try to figure out what I asked a question, and I think it's somewhat funny for people to hear. It wasn't funny to me at the time, but it's funny in retrospect. I remember being in therapy and saying to my therapist, "Listen, I was like, I was doing something illegal. Like, I know we're not supposed to talk about this, but can you tell me what's wrong with me? I know I'm not supposed to ask that question, but just between you and me, can you tell me why I'm so fucked up?" And he ditched the question, and that sort of prompted me to start doing some of my own research. I've done a lot of reading and a lot of reading, not in the sense of trying to get lost in the intellectual piece of it, because there's a lot of stuff. Back in the mid 80s, we could fill a conference, a 6 foot conference, 2 6 foot conference tables with all these little Xerox at the time, copies of all this literature. And it was cute because you'd walk in and you get a big pack of papers and you go home and you're still crazy. I just wasn't doing it. There had to be a little more focus, I guess, or structure for us to figure out, hey, we're working on some very powerful, painful stuff. And in that regard, again, to the newcomer, this is not to scare you, but this is some of the most powerful stuff that's done in rooms of recovery. Because of that, I've never pressured, guilted, shamed anybody for coming or not coming. If you can't, if you, it's not for you, it's not for you. Maybe will be for you some other time, but for now, maybe it's not the right time. I invited a guy to one of our local meetings back when we had face-to-face meetings. I invited a guy to a meeting that we held on Tuesdays. And he came to the meeting on Tuesday and he had a heart attack on Wednesday. He didn't come back. I invited this guy who stands about 6'4". He's like a lumberjack kind of guy, maybe 6'5", 340 pounds, solid muscle. I invited him to a meeting on a Friday, and he had the heart attack on Thursday. In fact, that was about, I'm gonna say, 12 years ago. And he just called me the day before yesterday. He's in a hospital. He had a relapse, and he remembered that I had had a conversation with him about this level of work. And he says he's ready now at 73 to get the work done. No shame in the game. This is very powerful stuff and very difficult stuff. So some of the things that have helped me, so this is now moving from newcomer to middle people who've been here for a little while. Some of the things that has helped me tremendously is finding a modality, a way of working with the critical parent, or the false self. And this to me was like blew my mind when I got that first big red book, which I think was still, they were still numbering them. So it was like book 340 something or whatever it is. And they started talking about false self and true self and modes of thinking. And I'm saying, wait, what the heck? I remember I read the book, like if it were a novel, and at the end they would tell me how the hero rises and triumphs. And it's it wasn't a novel. It's a fellowship text. So they're just giving you the tools. So I said, whoa, they're trying to tell you something. You have to like absorb, apply, and then see how it turns out. So when it came time to read the chapter 8 on the solution, I paid close attention to those modes of thinking, that perfectionism, controlling, all or nothing, and judgmentalness. And I remember finding it hysterical for me anyway. And again, I come from a twisted place. To me, some things that are twisted are funny, So this is what I'm saying. When I would hear my thoughts, I would witness my thoughts, and I realize, oh, that's judgmental. Oh, that's all or nothing. Oh, that's professional. And after a while, it was like I didn't have an emotionally sober thought ever. It was everything was emotionally toxic. And there were a lot of times where I was dealing with people where I had to just shut up because I didn't know how to do that, how to just be present. One of the things that's happened to me over the course of my time in the program has been that I picked up bits and pieces from other authors and experiences, and just been able to put pieces together on this puzzle. And one of the major pieces is this, again, by no way is this an endorsement, or am I asking you to subscribe, to like, and to follow. This is not that kind of party. Everybody's got their own path. And I love witnessing other people's paths. And the point that I'm making is there was a book that we all enjoyed back in the 80s called The Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller. And in it, what I took from it was that what she felt we needed most, wow, as children, that just brought up a little bit of sadness right there. What we needed most was an enlightened witness, somebody who could see us going through the struggle, know the struggle, be compassionate about the struggle, not necessarily rescue, not fix, just somebody who got it, who could be there for us and hold that space and say, this is hard. This is tough. I remember I was down in Puerto, I think it was in Puerto Rico. They were doing this major conference and invited the WSO to participate. And went down there, sold literature, had a meeting, and at the end of the meeting, one of the women that came to the meeting said, I wanted to share, but I was afraid I was going to throw up. This is real. To which I responded. And I know this is going to be like self-deprecating and perhaps even sarcastic to the point where people are not going to like it, but this is what I said, and I meant it, and I think she felt it, and I think it's could be interpreted as a very generous of heart kind of expression. So if you hear it another way, that's not how I intended it. And what I told her was, we have a bucket and a mop. You want to throw up? Let's go. I got you. And that's been the beauty of the program for me. So I guess what I'm trying to get to for those of us who are beyond, the very beginning is that the work may entail, going into different modalities or things, practices, literature. I was doing retreats with my brother. And the shortest version of this story is there was a guy that we hired to do the retreat, to facilitate the retreat. And he said that he wanted to do the, so he was, we hired two people. One guy would do the main event, excuse me, and this other guy would be in charge of a non-denominational spiritual practice that we would do to sort of make sure that we had healed all the things that we had opened or closed, closed everything that we had opened. So this guy who was doing this spiritual piece approached my brother and said, "I want to do it next year on trauma." And something deep inside of me said, "This guy is trying to use this group to work on his trauma." And I was very protective of that retreat. My model was, we're going to provide the highest level of program, like that inpatient that I had, at the very lowest cost. And so I began to do research. And within that research, I found this book. Again, I won't mention the author, but I did find this book that sort of listed all the modalities that are commonly used to treat people with complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And within that, I found the modality that I think is the shortest leap from critical, I actually changed the term, from critical parent to critical survival parent, or false self, to loving parent. How do you know you're in a loving parent mode? How do you know it's not another false self that's masquerading as a loving parent? And I have seen, and those of us who've been here for a minute, we have seen people do decades of this dance. They just put on a new set of clothes, maybe changed a hairdo, not for us, but they just changed their look, but they're still critical survival parents. They're still in protection mode, or they're in coping skills. They're reactionary. Decades. And again, no judgment. I get that it's hard, but if there was a modality that could show you how to stay or get into in the loving parent mode and work with those critical survival parents or those false selves, well, now it's a game changer. We're on a whole different level. Because if the, I think it was, I said this before at another share that I gave in ACA about how Einstein said a problem can't be solved at the level it was created. Excuse me. And this whole thing, starts with a kid, me, being, I'm just trying to figure out the time frame, because it had to be, I'm going to say I was like 6, 7 years old, witnessing domestic violence, which is bad enough. Watching my father chase my older brother. So if I'm 7, he's 19. Chase my brother outside, chase my brother down the street with a machete. And so what does a kid do with all this harsh, emotionally toxic baggage? He hides. One of the things, and I'm sorry, I'm going off point for a minute. I have, and I suspect it's not a unique ability. By the way, I'm pretty sure nothing that I'm saying is new, but it was new to me when I discovered it. It's almost like the new world was discovered, right? Well, all this stuff is new to me, but it's probably, I mean, I have never ever had an original thought. I've come to that realization. Anyway, what I discovered was that there's this method of being able to engage the critical survival parent or the false self along, and figure out how to get into inner loving parent mode without it being a tug of war, without it being debilitating or exhausting. And I will say this without any question. No matter what I think is lurking behind door number two, I'm always wrong. I'm always wrong. I've never gotten it right. I can, hear you share, and I can think, and you can share something, and I can make a connection in my head. But if we sat down and you were doing your fifth step, I guarantee you it wouldn't be what I was thinking. I don't know if I just have a bad sensor or my radar is off, or if these things are just coded, individually coded. And you're the only one who, we're the only ones who have the code breaking capability. Everybody else, of course, it's a code, so therefore you can't figure it out. So I did want to see where I am. See, 15 minutes. So that's a lot of stuff. So I did want to share with you. I don't think I can do a screen share, and I don't want to take time away and distract you guys too much with it, but I'll describe this like 8-point slide that I have that it occurs to me is for those of us who've been through the steps, have some more experience with traits work, defects of character work, and reparenting, and a sort of tilting in the other direction. So there's two different pieces I want to wind down with my last 14 minutes. One is that if you look at the cover of our 12-step workbook, it's a tree. And the tree has limbs and fruit, which we are told are defects of character and traits, respectively. Then we published a book called The Laundry List Workbook. And that one has a flower on its cover. Then they published the Reparenting Workbook, and this book has a flower looking at itself in a mirror. Now, we intentionally picked the flower for the Laundry List Workbook to keep with the horticultural theme. You know, that was intentional. I don't know. I wasn't there when they did the Reparenting book. But what has occurred to me is that we're looking at the tree. We're looking at the fruit and we're looking at the flower. But ultimately, the goal is to get to the roots. And these roots are buried. And it's hard to excavate a root because they don't grow perfectly parallel or perpendicular. They tend to, you know, be gnarly and it's stuck. And then as I drew this up, it occurs to me that there are different layers of soil. And I think I broke it down to like five or six different layers. And the first layer is personal or familial. The second one is social. The third one, you start expanding your, I guess, the focus of the socialization. So you go from personal, familial to social grouping to social grouping. Then I think I go to, actually, I have it here. Let me just not try to play like I can remember off the top. Right. So it's personal, it's topsoil, familial, generational. There's some stuff that we inherited through by virtue of our genetic coding. And then there's social, something I labeled imperial geopolitical. Sixth layer is servitude, and the seventh layer is humanity. And what I generally think is that we're all the product of all of that. In fact, I was just watching something on TV about space. Oh, there was a news reporter whose kid is into this whole eclipse thing that went down. And you know, I think what they're telling us is that we are as old as the universe because we're a product of the universe. So within all these layers lies all the different influences, all the different things that shaped our tree. So if you're here and you're working on defects of character, wonderful. If you're here and you're working on traits, spectacular. At some point, you gotta get in the roots. Sorry. It's not easy work. It's easier with this modality, though, because those modalities are, I would say, transformational. You can go from wherever you are to an understanding of the, you know, of the expanse of the entire thing, which is why, in the beginning, it's like whatever works for you, come to meetings. If you have to vomit, we have a bucket, enema, we got you, whatever you got to do. And connect with somebody or in a group and do a step study or a trait study or whatever kind of study you need to do. Maybe you go to this meeting on Friday nights and you dance, which is exceptionally smart. There is a there's scientific evidence to suggest that doing anything rhythmic actually takes your brain wavelength to the right level. So it could be dancing, it could be drumming, it could be bicycling, it could be swimming. Anything that's rhythmic is very, very healthy for us. Or for those of us who feel that our brain wavelength isn't at the right point, which may not be everyone. So anywho, winding down. So I've come to this place where there are certain things, like I said, that are generational, some things that are geopolitical, and all of it comes out in my interacting with the world. It also comes out of everyone I deal with. They may not label it as such. They may not be in a program, but I can, if I got it, I can spot it. It makes it a lot easier. There's a lot less confusion, a lot more clarity. There's a lot more depth, a lot more detail. There's a lot more empathy, a lot more compassion. There's a lot more maturity, or as my therapist would say, there's a lot more wisdom. And that may be a function of just being 61. Or it could be the function of, having been here for a minute. Or it could be a function of my five elements of ACA recovery. From wherever it came, it was something that my father didn't get to, couldn't get to. And to complete that part of the story, my father took off on me when I was about, like I said, five or six, I guess. But his father took off on him and never was there for him. In fact, my father's stepfather, now that's not even right. Let's be clear. The man, and I hate to put it in these terms because I sound like I'm trying to be like ghetto about it, but the man that got with my paternal grandmother never married her, had three kids. Got murdered, and she died from the grief, leaving my father as like a 19-year-old with three young siblings to take care of because they were orphaned. I carry that. That's part of my DNA. That's part of how I react to the world. I have that deficit, that father deficit, the father wound, that lack of paternal strain, it's very weak. And so I project that. I personify it until I do the work and I'm able to repair it myself from that and recognize when it's up and say, oh, look at you. I haven't seen you in a minute. Wow. So we're still working on this, huh? How old are you now? And what's this about? What are you really trying to tell me? And usually the information is much more than I can think through. So that to say that my journey has been miraculous. I was talking to, and I'm really winding down now. It looks like 6 minutes if my eyes are right. Yeah, let me just put that big so I can see it. Okay. I got a call from a guy, great guy, really wants the program, wants the promises, but man, his critical survival parent has him. I don't know if for some people this may not make sense, but has him in a real bad way. So to sort of put a picture on it, there's something called mixed martial arts, and and when they originally started televising it, it was a lot more bloody. Well, this is that times 10, how he's being, his ass is getting hit by, this process. I mean, it's just horrible to hear how he's experiencing his recovery. But he's here and he's calling me. He's saying, "Listen, is it true? Is it possible that I can get better?" I said, "100%. I know this. I've lived this. I've been in that dark space. I've been on the floor in a fetal position. I've been absolutely pissed off at God or whatever the hell they want to call it these days. And I'm not that guy. I'm just acting a little bit here. I don't have an issue with the word God, but if you do, I hear you too. Yeah, screw that. Fuck that shit. I'm coming with that. There's a in my layers of dysfunction, there's a layer in there that deals with religious abuse too, because if you know your history, it's there. So all that to say that with this guy, I'm telling him, like I'm telling anyone who may be listening, it's absolutely doable. It's hard. It's dark. It's dirty. It's messy. It's not pretty. It's not put the cork in the bottle and you'll be fine. Just don't pick up and it's more than that, but it's absolutely doable. And I'll close down with this. I had in my early recovery, they used to say, whatever you wish for, whatever you think you want right now, if you drew up a list right now, we're going to surpass that. And I didn't have a hell of a lot of dreams. I have a very limited window. What can I do and how am I going to get there is my window. I'm not imagining, divine intervention or anything. I'm pretty reality based in that regard. But I gotta tell you, it's beyond my wildest dreams. I say it like that because there's a critical part that I think that if I say it, it'll go away. It's sort of like I'll jinx it. Respect. Expansive. Got it. Three. Free. Happy. Joyous. Service, the whole night. The whole night. And then some. So if you're new and you're just coming around, we recommend that you make six meetings in a row. And that in your head, you have everything you need. Meetings, fellow traveler, which is the ring finger. Do work, you're A-okay. Reparenting. If somebody's pissing you off, that's the opportunity to get some work done. You got it. You got your assignment. Now get to it. Trauma-informed therapy, you're going to be A-okay. Thank you guys for listening. I didn't think I could do it, but I did it. Man, that was really cool. Thank you guys. Appreciate you.
Wow.
Thank
Thank
you, Larry.
Thank you,
Larry.
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 Thank you,
Thank you.
Larry.